Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Josh and Lucas, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by our supporting partners, NHI, RCARE, NRC Health, TSO Life, Erdman, and Sherpa. View more and check out all things Bridge the Gap on our new website, btgvoice.com.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast with Josh and Lucas. We are in San Diego at the NIC conference, and we are going out in the crowds. And we're trying to find the best people to talk to, and this has been a bucket list for us. Today, I would love to welcome our best friend and CEO of Priority Life Care, Sevi Petras.
Nailed it.
Yes. Got it.
So this is so fun. And your company is one that we love following. It's one of the few that's on Instagram and Facebook, and you guys are putting out content. But before we get there, we want you to tell our listeners some of your background and how you got to this point.
Oh my gosh. First of all, thank you so much for having me on. This is one of my bucket lists because I love you guys and I follow both of you individually as well as on Bridge the Gap and love following your stuff that you're both individually doing in the senior housing world. I'm just so impressed with you guys.
Oh, thank you.
And love the contribution. I mean, it's amazing to have friends who we get to do these types of things with, right?
It's fun. Like,
we're really lucky.
This is really fun.
And San Diego normally is a little bit, you know, more
Sunny?
Yeah, we're having fun anyway.
Yeah, but this is, we're making it bright inside.
That's right.
Breaking it bright
inside. You're bringing the brightness.
Doing my best. So just to give a little background on who we are and how we got here and how I got here is, I guess I could start with, I'd tell a little bit of the story. Yeah. I'll try to shorten it because it's a kind of long one. But one of the stories that we like to tell the people that work with us is how me, my brother, my mom, my sister-in-law, and one of my best friends got started in seniors housing on the operations side. Mm-hmm. So I'd been a banker for about 10 years, and I'd worked on the bond side in public finance, and then ended up doing some lending in specifically senior housing with Merrill Lynch and Heller with some really great guys. And as the downturn came and everybody kind of was at a standstill in banking, my mom was actually an administrator at an assisted living memory care building in West Virginia. And so there really wasn't much going on, so I was training for two Ironmen at the time.
Whoa.
And so I was going between my mom and dad's house and then one of my friend's house in Colorado, because that's where all triathletes like go to do Ironmen, as Scott Stewart knows.
Yes.
I've done a couple with him. And so I was there, and when I was there, my mom kept coming home and talking about these just stories of these individuals who lived there for a long time and had ran out of money, and they were no longer able to stay in the community. And I was like, well, I was a banker. We went to different types of assisted livings that had programs that the state provided funding for. And I'm like, oh, well, that's silly, Mom. They should just go to those buildings that have the funding. And my mom's like, well, Sevi, not all the states have this funding. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, how do people pay for assisted living? I mean, I understood from a banking perspective, because there was a lot of private pay. Those are like the high-end ones. Like, weren't there these lower-end ones? Maybe we just didn't lend to them at Merrill Lynch Capital, but there had to be those out there. So my mom was like, there's just not. So what I started doing, because my background from my master's work was specifically in statistics, I started looking at the statistics. So I knew that there were all these seniors coming up. The silver tsunami was on the way.
Right.
And we were still quite a few years behind it. And that we were going to have some issues with these private pay worlds that people were, how they paid for it. So one, people would sell their homes, right? So use the money from their homes to fund their assisted living and the rest of the money that they needed for hopefully the remainder of their life. Two, adult children kicked in to help pay for it. Three, they were looking at what they had in their savings. Well, 401ks were diminished as a result of the downturn. Home values completely like were wiped out the board, mm-hmm. and people couldn't even sell their homes.
Right.
Adult children, either one or both of them lost their jobs. And then also sometimes they had adult children that they then had to have bring back home and help fund.
Back in mom's basement.
Yep. Absolutely. So it was kind of like a trifecta of like difficulty from a financial perspective for how people are going to be able to fund assisted living in the years to come. So I said, man, I think that some of these states are going to have to embrace some additional options for people rather than a nursing home. We know that the nursing home costs are entirely too high and that the consumers coming up, we're going to want something different than sharing a room in a hospital bed with a shared bathroom and a lot of restrictions. So we kind of started looking at some states that already had programs in place, like the state of Oregon and Wisconsin. Okay. And Oregon had done a really good job already in really flipping how many people were in the nursing home to the assisted living and saving the state an awful lot of money. So we really started focusing on, from just a marketing research perspective, what states were starting to have these waiver programs. Mm-hmm. And where we could kind of start to identify some properties that might make sense and where the states were going to be amenable. So we looked in like Indiana, Ohio, Maryland, Florida had some stuff as well. And so I put together all these statistics and it was Thanksgiving. I came with an easel, you know, one of those ones you get at like, yeah. you know, Office Max.
Yeah.
And I wrote out an organization plan, like who's CEO, who's CFO, who's ops person, who's marketing, who's this. I put together a whole business plan. There was a lot of wine at the table.
Yes.
You know, at my family table. And I said, pretty much everybody's going to quit their jobs and they're going to come and work with me for free. And we're going to take on the senior housing industry in terms of starting to find an affordable product with repurposing some older buildings, whether they were independent livings that just couldn't really make it, or they were hotels that had lost their flagship, or they were purpose-built and just needed some renovations and made, you know, adding in this memory care piece as well as some assisted living waiver from the state. And so everybody's cheersing and being like, yeah, this sounds great. Fantastic, Sevi. We're way behind you.
Can you imagine their Thanksgiving table?
Like, well, we're going to dive a little deeper into this family like business thing.
Building and get the real empire over turkey.
Yes.
And wine.
Yes. We're going to dive in deeper on that for sure.
Sorry.
And
go
he,
ahead.
And he has met my family, so okay, he totally knows.
I've got to learn. They're all rock stars.
Yeah, you've met my whole family. And so the next morning, my brother, so I only have one brother, and he was married at the time, so he was already married, and they didn't have any kids. And so they're driving back to Fort Wayne, Indiana in the morning. And, you know, I'm staying at my parents' house. And Bobby says to Brandy, they're driving. He's like, oh, what a fun Thanksgiving. And his wife, Brandy, looks over at him. He says, I mean, that's not serious, right? Like, we're not really going to quit our jobs and, like, start this company with Sevi. And Bobby was like, no, I don't know. He was like, Sevi's pretty, you know, when she's made her mind up, like.
It's going to happen.
And sure enough, like. Little by little, like, I just whittled them down, and everybody came on board unpaid. And so that's how we kind of got things started. So that was, like, 2008, 2009. And by 2010, we'd identified a partner, and then we'd identified four communities that we were able to acquire during one of the worst economic downturns and one of the worst financial situations, and able to bring on some of the largest assisted living buildings that offer Medicaid waiver in the states. And that's kind of how we got our start.
That's an incredible story. So I've got so many questions now. I've got a lot of questions.
You weren't gonna
say anything. Well, no, I'm just sitting here. I think Lucas has an advantage because he's known you longer, got to meet your family. So a lot of, you know, I see the now, mm-hmm. but I didn't know a lot of the backstory. I didn't know about the banking and your background mm-hmm. in that and so forth. So I learned a little bit about that before our show. So it sounds like you've been tackling like what I as an operator think is one such a huge need because mm-hmm. you're talking like affordability
middle market.
We have mm-hmm. a whole conversation about that, right? Everybody's talking about that. Mm-hmm. But then the transition business. So you guys went into some places that at least you were leading me to think these are not easy situations.
Yeah.
And that's a market that a lot of our industry, I'd say the majority of the industry, just kind of like, oh, yeah, that's a huge need. We need to talk about that. And then they kind of like turn and kind of look the other way.
100%.
So, I mean, what, just pull back the veil a little mm-hmm. bit here, because it seems like Priority Life's got it going on. Sevi's in control. But let's talk.
Well, that's debatable at times.
Well, let's talk about some of those challenges and those transitions. And, you know, because I think a lot of operators that are listening are thinking, oh, that's intriguing. You know, we want to do that, or we're in the middle of that. And, gosh, we're hitting landmines everywhere. Mm-hmm. So what were some of your – think back. What were some, have been some of your pitfalls and some of the obstacles you've had to overcome, some tidbits you can give our audience.
Sure, some nuggets.
Yeah, nuggets.
Nuggets. And I'm always an open kimono. Like, and I've always said this anytime I've spoke anywhere or I meet anybody, like anything I can do to help further this cause, like I am all for it. Mm-hmm. I think, what do they say that when you copy somebody is the best form of flattering.
Yeah.
I want to see more people copy this. Like, right. Please do it. So like some of the biggest challenges for us are a couple things. So one, there's only a few things that we can control, you know, as an operator when it comes to costs, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the whole name of the game, right? Like even not-for-profits have to like actually be able to sustain themselves, right? So there's like labor is labor, mm-hmm. and we all have to attract good, solid people that we can count on, and we have to be able to we have to be able to compensate them appropriately, right? And compensation isn't just what we're paying people hourly. You know, it's also what we're able to offer them in the forms of benefits. And that can be a little bit more difficult, as a smaller operator in terms of being able to be more competitive with your benefits and your packages, mm-hmm. and the type of support that you can offer them, right? So that's one of the big ones. Food cost is another large mm-hmm. cost. Insurance costs are, mm-hmm. We all have to have it, and those are, regardless, expensive. Mm-hmm. So what can we really control then from an expense perspective to be mm-hmm. able to offer these things at a better price? Our mortgage, right? So it's how much you actually pay for the property. Mm-hmm. So some of the difficulties have been, we were very fortunate, when we started in this, because there weren't a lot of people competing for some of these types of properties, mm-hmm. that we could pick these things up at the right price, renovate them, get them licensed, or add the licensing for, really our price point was trying to get somewhere between $50,000 and $60,000 a unit. Mm-hmm. We always look to have not semi-privates. Mm-hmm. Like, we were always looking to try to have as many private units as we possibly could, because in some of the states, to offer waiver, they had to have a private bathroom and their own private room. So one of the biggest pitfalls, I think, has been looking at those different buildings and then figuring out, so how can we do this affordably but still not compromise on the amenities that we're able to offer? Because we have to have good programming, right? Like, sure. So we're licensed and regulated the same way everybody else is, no matter how expensive your care, how expensive you're paying to be in that building or how low you're paying to be in the building. So you have to be able to find that. So that has been the difficulty, is the balance and being able to find that. It's become more difficult because prices have become a lot more competitive. Cap rates are getting, squeezed a little bit from that perspective. And so I would say that's probably more difficult. And construction costs have been rising.
Yes.
So that's been making it a lot more difficult. In 2010 through 2014, 15, things were pretty low and you could still get things at a decent price. And right now we're finding people want paid for value that you have to create. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it more difficult to find that, that way to get in there and find the affordability. So we're trying to be more creative in working with and partnering with other platforms and people. One of the things we're doing right now is I'm on a consortium for, it's called Upward Labs, and they're in Hartford, Connecticut. And they have this Shark Tank kind of thing.
Okay.
Where we just sat and listened to 15 startup tech companies who are trying to, shake up or do something different in either software or technology, specifically in the aging population. And these guys have the backing of Lincoln Financial, Hartford, Cigna, Aetna, big financial partners that if one or some of these are selected and they're going to be piloted in our communities, that they have the ability to really make some changes. And so I think those are the ways that we're going to have to continue to be creative so that we can continue to offer things at an affordable price.
So cool.
Because it's not always, the states aren't always increasing the rates on a annual basis.
Right.
Sometimes they're cutting them to mm-hmm. some degree, and they're coming down harder from a regulatory perspective. Mm-hmm. So we have to try to find other ways that we can really be creative in keeping those costs down.
Great insight. So we could talk a lot about that topic. There's so much there, but I want to dive into another little. I'm going to get real personal here.
Yeah.
So I follow you at a personal level and at Priority. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I want to touch on is family business, because we've all had good and bad experiences or stories that we've heard of family business. You guys mm-hmm. seem to be really excelling at it. And I love seeing your family. You spend a lot of time with your family, and I'm talking multiple generations of family, so not just the immediate family. It's so fun to see. You guys actually look like you like each other, possibly love each other, which is
like savvy.
That's what social media is for, right?
Yeah, so, but tell us, what's it like? So you told us a little nugget of how you kind of rallied the family, we'll call the troops, to believe in you. But what's that journey been like with the family, and how do you guys juggle that of living together and the stress that goes with operating. Like, how do y'all turn that on, turn it off? I mean, what's your secret?
Give mama a BMW or a Mercedes,
we
right?
did. We did. Yeah, so our mom was our very first administrator in our very first building. And so, and when we bought the building, in 99 units, it had 19 people living in it that were basically independent living and weren't paying to live there. Mm-hmm. I mean, we called them free 99s because when the people that had it before were not giving them 1099s for working in lieu of rent. Mm-hmm. And so we called them free 99s. So when that was our very first building, and this is probably one of my favorite stories. This is a great way to sum up, and then I'll talk a little bit more about how we've got to where we are now.
Sure.
This is 10 years in the making, right? So our first building, my mom was the administrator. We had a business office manager who was there. We had my brother was handling operations. My sister-in-law was overseeing the marketing. My best friend, Joe Record, was also there, and she was our brand manager putting together all of our marketing packages. And then I was overseeing all the financials and working with our back office from our partner, et cetera. So we were all in this one building with, like, not a lot of, like, office space. And, like, none of us were making any money, right? My mom had, like, a salary as an administrator, but there was, like, hardly any revenue coming in. So we were all just, like, gung-ho 100% looking for other buildings. The business office manager comes into my mom's office, which basically all of us were in, and everybody was kind of off except for me. And we're sitting in there, and she comes in, and she's crying. And, you know, I'm in my like, you know, business kind of suit because I'm used to working in, you know, the professional, you know, white-collar world. And I'm sitting in there, and she's crying to my mom, and I'm kind of half listening, and I'm kind of not listening. And my mom, and she leaves the room, and I was like, Mom, like, what the heck? Like, there's no crying in the office. This is a professional setting. You can't be crying here right now. Like, this is ridiculous. And my mom said, Severin? And when I get a Severin, I'm in big trouble.
Oh, man.
Severin, let me tell you something. You don't work in an office anymore. You don't work in corporate America anymore. You work in people's homes. And we're dealing with people who are emotional because she was crying because somebody that she's been working with and been here with for the last 2.5 years is dying. And you and people cry. And she said, and you want to know something? You hug them. You don't shake their hand. And she said, and by the way, lose the suit because you're making everybody really nervous when you come in here with that. She's like, you see anybody that's sitting at home in their suit? No. She's like, so lose the suit. And I was like, this big wave came over me. And I was like, man, wow, like, you're totally right, because I was really looking at things from, I'm still in this corporate world, I'm dealing with bankers, I'm dealing with investors, and I really hadn't really looked at the, like, the human part of what we're dealing with not just our residents, because I look at it from the residents, and I'm like, okay, I get that, but I really didn't understand the impact that it was having on our employees, and eventually, obviously, on myself as well, as I got more ingrained in that piece of it. So, you know, my mom gives us tough love, a lot of tough love. Yeah. And her name is Debbie, but we call her Deb. And okay. she oversees all of our HR and payroll now, but we call it our corporate soul because that's the crux of what makes us who we are. It's our people. And so we approach things from a coaching perspective.
Sure.
So it's not just a place that you get your paycheck. It's not just a place that you're, you know, coming to get in trouble. You know, we try to take this, so we call them Deb Talks. Like, mm-hmm. if my mom has a Deb Talk with you.
Instead of the TED Talk,
it's a Deb Talk.
Yeah, I love
it. Totally different talk.
It's a totally different talk. And my mom, the way she does it, it's that, like, that's a really good example of a shortened Deb Talk. But it's one of those ones where, you know, they kind of, like, she'll break you down to where you're, like, angry. You want to cry, and then at the end of it, you're, like, empowered. And wow. I think, like, those are the coaching moments that we try to find there. And my mom, so we've really taken my mom's approach to that throughout, like, our entire string. And so, and I think that that's what's led to the success of our family together is because we aren't afraid to call each other out. We're not afraid to get angry with one another. I've been hung up on. I've been told, you know, to shove it. I've had every one of my family members have quit, except for my sister-in-law, Brandy. Brandy's never quit on me.
Loyal.
Yeah.
Shout out to Brandy,
who is amazing. I mean, and that's part of the thing, too, is we are best friends. We're all best friends. Like, Lucas knows this. He's hung out with my mommy and my dad. You know, but it's because we're not afraid to have the difficult talks. We're not afraid to call each other out when we think we're being too high high and mighty. Mm-hmm. And we're not afraid to say, hey, you're being a jerk, or you're not looking at it this way. Or, and one of the things we did really early on, because we were in the same office in one building and we were all working towards the same thing, we were butting heads a lot at the very beginning. And so I brought in a really good friend of mine who happened to work for, it wasn't Amazon. It was like VRBO or something. Hmm. So he worked for one of those companies, and he did a test where they look at all of your personalities. I can't remember what those are. It's like all the letters.
Disc?
A disc.
Yeah.
He came in, and I brought our whole team in, and I had no money to do it. And I was like, what is the minimum amount I can pay you to do this test? And because I just knew, like, if we were all going to continue to function well together and maintain a good family life, how we were going to do this. And what we found out is that my brother and I were very, very similar personalities, and my mom and my sister-in-law were almost identical personalities. Mm. And then Jill was kind of somewhere in the middle of all of us. And so once I realized how I needed to speak with my mom and my sister-in-law and how I needed to talk with my brother, and they understood how I was talking, it made all the difference.
Wow.
Because when I get angry, I talk slower and calmer. I choose my words like more precisely. And my mom and my sister-in-law and everybody else, including my husband, poor Felipe, they take that as I'm being condescending, yes, whereas I'm trying to be more cautious and more conscious of like what I'm saying. So we don't do the best job with balancing, mm-hmm, between the family and the work. Like, I remember one of my first niece's baptisms, my brother was like, hey, look, guys, we are not going to talk about work. Okay. Like, let's just enjoy this day. Let's be mindful of it. Let's just enjoy each other.
Impossible.
And we ended up in the kitchen talking, and my brother was the one who brought it up. So I was like, I didn't start it. But we're very, very passionate about what we do. Sure. And we love it so very much that it's very difficult for us to not be talking about it when we're together, because, I mean, that's what we do.
Well, and I think that that's a leadership story that transcends a family business. You're illuminating and uncovering how to develop culture in a business. It reminds me, I just finished a book called Radical Candor, and it's that process of identifying those hard conversations and approaching it in a way that is direct but also respectful, and it seems like you guys are really implementing that. But it's a great pivot point into culture.
Mm-hmm.
What are you guys doing as far as culture? Well, I actually know because I'm watching it. You've got team members out there doing videos. You're highlighting your services. How is that? Where did that start, and what kind of impact is that having on your company?
So, you know, so it was when we first started out, you know, we had like 4 buildings and then 6 buildings and 11 buildings, and we're very hands on and we like to go to the buildings. I like to go and do trainings myself still. But as we started growing and getting bigger, it became obvious that it was more difficult for us to penetrate down to like the hourly employees on the weekends and the evenings. So when I started looking at it, and I try to, you know, engulf as many books as I possibly can as well, and I haven't really seen anything that's different. I feel like a lot of people are saying a lot of the same things.
Sure.
One of the things that I thought was really important, because I would come away from different topics or conversations or meetings, and I would have these great ideas, and I wasn't really having anybody who could go back and just focus 100% on them. So I said to my brother, I said to Bobby, I said, hey, I really think we need to have one person who's dedicated to this. And he was like, you're totally right. I said, I want to have a culture cultivator. I said, I want to have a director of our corporate experience. And I want them to drive our mission behind our corporate soul. And he said, that's awesome. And then Brandy said, because this was, I think, around a couple glasses of wine, and I was sitting at their house. Because when I go to our back office, I stay at their home.
Okay.
And I have three nieces and a nephew there, and I usually sleep with my niece Bianca or my niece Bella. I don't get my own room.
Right.
So one of them is always sleeping with me.
Bunk beds.
Literally bunk beds, but there's always one like near
sure.
me. So I said, and Brandy said, hey, I have a great person. And it happened to be a person who is working in our ARAP back office in Fort Wayne, James Ouellette. And we kind of tapped him on the shoulder, who, by the way, he is your number one fan.
So. Yeah, shout out to James.
James, appreciate it.
We've been following James' journey.
Yes.
Yes.
Strong mustache game, too.
He does, doesn't he?
Incredible. Killer. Oh, not too many people can pull that off, and he does a great job.
Respect.
He really does. So we tapped James. We talked to him about it at the end of the year. And, you know, and I'd love for you guys to meet James and to see him in action sometime, because he just has this, like, remarkable personality. He is just vivacious and warm and caring and so sincere. And so, and we saw how I had one instance where we had an issue. As you know, as an operator, it's all about balancing our vendors and paying them. Look, we'd all love to pay everybody at the beginning of the month and 30 days before the bill is due.
Sure.
It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And so it's about balancing that. And so James, we had an issue. And the problem was the bills kept coming to me. Mm. Somebody was physically sending me the bills to
right
my house.
Right to the top.
So they're physically sending me the bill. Not electronically either, by the way. Like a physical piece of paper to my home. And so I just assumed it was like a copy. Mm-hmm. And everybody in my company, by the way, knows not to give me anything of any importance or value that is a physical copy of anything, because it will never get to where it needs to go. I am aware of my flaws, and that is one of them. So I was like, so they're emailing me, and they're like, Sevi, you know, it's getting towards the end of the year, and you have like this AR. This was Taft, this is my lawyers. This is Eric Simon and Peter Nealis telling the story. And I was like, oh my gosh, Eric, I'm so sorry. Like, I don't know why this hasn't been paid. Like, let me contact my back office. So I call Yvonne Byers, our CFO, who's an amazing woman. License administrator. And I said, hey, Yvonne, like, why isn't this paid? She's like, Sevi, I don't have this anywhere in our system. Like, I don't know where these bills are.
They're all on your coffee table.
And I said, and my husband, Felipe, God bless him, said, hey, Sevi, we get those bills here. And I said, what do we do with them? He's like, I think you throw them away. And I said, well, I just thought they were copies. Like, who sends me a physical bill? So I say, can you email these to me? Like, can you get them to me? And I'll make sure they get to the right people. And so James gets on it. And James emails the people. He calls the people. And this is his response back. This was his response back. He said, thank you so much for explaining the problem. I think we've got to the base of where the problem was. It wasn't coming to the right person. He left my name out of it.
Yeah. He didn't throw you under the bus.
Bottleneck.
That's a good James.
He didn't throw me under the bus. And he said, and what he said in the email was he reconfirmed what they'd talked about on the phone. He reconfirmed how the situation was going to be resolved. And then he gave them a deadline of when it was going to be paid by. And then within a week, he followed up and said, thank you so much. We now have these in our system, and please confirm that you've received the wire that we sent. And I was just like, oh my gosh, like, this is what I want every vendor, family member, employee. That is exactly how I want them to have an experience with us in a very difficult situation. I mean, we had really outstanding AR at that point, you know, accounts payable at that point. And I was like, and they could have been really angry, and like just the way that he handled that. So anytime anything had kind of escalated, I started like sending it to James, like, James, could you follow up with this? Because I think one of the things that is very difficult in our day and age is that we get so heavily reliant on technology. We just email people when we should be calling them, and we text people when we should be having a conversation with them. And so that's been one of our big things is, hey, you need to know when to send an email, when it's appropriate to send a text, when it's appropriate to have it pick up the phone, and when it's appropriate to wait until you're in person. And so those are kind of the communication piece is what we've really been working on, even with our family. I mean, there's some things where I'm like, okay, this text message has gone on too long. Like, we all need to just pick up the phone. And so James really just kind of portrayed, without us even telling him, like, that's what I wanted our experience for any vendor or any person to have. And so when we tapped him and I said, hey, this is what I think you could do, I mean, he just jumped kind of right in. Mm-hmm. We defined out, like, really what we wanted him to focus on this year, you know, really what we wanted him to jump into right away. But that's really kind of how we came to James's position.
I love that. So I'm learning so much. I feel like we could do an episode, Lucas, on that whole when and how the appropriate communication, because I think we all struggle with that.
We do.
I know I struggle with that. If you guys have nuggets on that, we're going to have you back for that.
Yeah.
And the other thing I have just learned is if Slevy is talking very slow and intentional with me, she's ticked. And what you need to know, Sevi, is I do that all the time just because I'm from Tennessee. It has nothing to do with me being angry with you. So, yeah, this is so fun. Well, thank you for being very transparent.
Anytime.
This is so helpful. You know, we need to be having more of these conversations because in the operator bus that many of us are in, you know, we're kind of all in the same bus. And so often we get unintentionally even in our little silos in our communities, and there's like wealth of information from people that have kind of been down the road. So thank you for be willing to just be transparent and share that. That's so informational.
Yeah. And we want to do a reality show about your life. I think that, that we need to,
yes.
you know, kind of like, you know, the real world, Sevi, you know, that sort of thing. I think that would scale well.
I would have a more like yoga clothes on, if that's cool.
Whatever works.
It's really funny. So when you come to our offices in Fort Wayne, my brother, we started our back office in our, my brother has a CrossFit gym. He's very fit. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, dude's like the Rock.
Yeah, I noticed. Yeah, we noticed. We don't talk about other dudes too much, but you know, we noticed.
My gosh.
We noticed.
Like, and he just like also like made it into like some CrossFit competition in Greece. Like,
we got to have him on the show.
He's like
just
really,
sign him up.
He's really good.
Maybe you and him could do a little CrossFit deal.
Yeah.
Okay, let's not go there, Lucas. Yeah. I see where you're trying to go.
No, we're
not
doing that. We can do that at the gym.
I'm gonna get you.
No.
We can do it at the gym. But so there was some office space that just came with the gym. And obviously that was already because, you know, we didn't really have a lot of money when we were restarting our platform. Mm-hmm. And so we had free office space. Yay.
Nice.
We still kind of do.
Oh, wow.
We had to build out the space a little bit more. But so everybody that's there gets, all of our employees get free CrossFit gym membership.
Wow.
And everybody just works in workout clothes.
I love it.
So we moved the offices because we were like, oh, maybe it should be a little bit more professional. Maybe we should, you know, move it. And we moved it and everybody revolted and was like, no, I want to be back at the gym. I want to just go back to wearing workout clothes. So when we have people... people come to the office, I'll be like, could you guys all wear like business casual? Just so. And so we've expanded and we had to go into like the warehouse part. So we're building it. It's really cool. Like we have like a golf simulator in there and a little bar.
I love that. And
it's really fun. And we're trying to make it different. And I know it's a little unconventional because when you first walk in, you're like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I'm literally walking into like a garage. Mm-hmm. But, And we're working on getting like a big training center with like a little bit fancier, you
that's
know,
cool.
kind of. That's really one of our goals this year that James is kind of taken on. And we've also brought on my husband Felipe as an unpaid consultant to help us with.
He probably already was.
I mean, he has been. It's just more official now.
Yeah.
But at some point we'll pay him. Everybody starts at our company, if they're related to us, is unpaid. Like that's just a prerequisite.
There you go.
And then we pay them.
At some point.
We had to test them out first since we didn't work.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. So when you guys come, like you'll see like half of the offices are on one side, then you have this like amazing CrossFit gym, and then there's other offices that are kind of like look like almost little houses. But one of our goals for this year is to create a really robust onboarding system for as we're onboarding new buildings that come on, onboarding every single position. And then how we're going to continuously do training so that something that we can monitor and help provide some type of support and a better way for us to engage with our employees versus trying to figure out ways for them to engage with us. And that's been, I think, our biggest thing that we're trying to change is, like, what can we do to engage with them versus expecting them, like, let me give you something and you engage with me.
Sure.
Like, let me come and engage with you.
Yeah.
And so I want us to create what would become the gold standard in training and onboarding in seniors housing. Because I think it's something that we're kind of missing the boat on.
Yeah.
Because we get so quick.
It's
like
hard.
People have to get in the buildings and we need to get them doing things. But I think that's part of the reason we're seeing a lot of turnover is because we're not doing a good job of explaining the expectations. Mm-hmm. And the expectations aren't just, hey, this is what you have to do on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. This is also what we're expecting you to react, and this is how we're expecting you to communicate. And this is how you would want to be communicated with, and this is how I would want to be communicated with. So we're just trying to figure out how we can be doing that better. Because I think we're all doing as best we can as operators.
Yeah.
But what else can we do? And that's why I love to talk to other operators. I don't know everything. Like, I love talking to people in other industries, which is one of the reasons I wanted Felipe to come on and say, hey, give us some other perspectives. Because I think we always look a lot internally, and we don't look externally when there's some people doing some really cool stuff.
Sure. Totally agree.
And you know what? And that's probably, that'll be the topic of our next show, because we're going to be following you very closely. And we would love to have you come back and talk about that onboarding process, because I think that you have just uncovered a huge piece of any business, in particular operations. And then that engagement. That's exactly what we want to do with our audience right now. So we'll connect to Sevi and her company in the show notes. You can follow them on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, all the social media sites. But we want to call to action right now. Now, engage back with us. Do you want to hear the rest of the story with Sevi coming up later at a different point about onboarding? Tell us yes or no. Is that an important topic? That'd be something really, really interesting of a way to engage back with our audience. So we'll connect all of that in the show notes. Sevi, thank you so much for being an awesome friend, an awesome rock star, a thought leader in this space, and a great collaborator. You've given us a ton of great information. Thank you.
Yes. You guys are amazing.
Thank you
for having me. It was my pleasure.
Awesome.
And thanks to Sarah for being back there and getting all this stuff together and keeping people from walking in front. That was a big job.
We're having a great time at the NIC conference here in San Diego, and it's been a great conversation and another great episode of Bridge the Gap.
Thank you.
The podcast team wants to hear from you. If you're on Instagram, let us know your takeaways. Take a screenshot of the show you just listened to, tag BTG Voice, and we might just share your thoughts. Thanks for listening to Bridge the Gap.